Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card, making personal loans more personal.
TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there, Colette.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Killing's a small thing. Getting away with it, that's not easy.
What are you saying, Liam?
Why not take what we need? What he doesn't need. The ill-gotten gold.
I couldn't kill anyone, nor would I want you to.
There are bromides. Opiates that will pacify a nervous horse. Put a man to sleep for 2 days. A share in his nightcap. And we'd be across the sea before he'd waken.
There you go. That's Death and Nightingales. It's running on Mondays at 9:35 on RT1, though, of course, you can catch up on the RTE player. James Dempsey joins us once again. Has this actually started, James?
Yeah, it started on Monday.
Right.
And it's a co-production between RTE and the BBC. So it was actually on the BBC last night. So if you were looking for it on the RTE player, that's why it wasn't there
until this
morning. But okay. Now it is.
And this is, I suppose, one could say, because I can't think of the last time RTE actually attempted something like this, that this is because it's you know, it's doing lots of comedy and the like, but this is a historical drama, which RTE hasn't done in a while.
Yeah, a period drama. I suppose the last one was, they did one about the 1916 Rising, I think called The Rising.
Yes. Cracking title, I thought too, yeah.
But, so this is based on a novel by a writer named Eugene McCabe, and it is it's sort of adapted for the screen by Alan Cubitt, which is not a name I recognise, but people will, because he was the creator of The Fall, and he has therefore...
Okay.
Joined up forces again with Jamie Dornan, who I guess we would say The Fall was kind of what turned him into kind of a cult star on this side of the Atlantic and propelled him to superstardom by way of E.L. James and whips and bodices and so on.
All the rest of it, but, yes.
And this is, I guess, a bodice ripper in its own right as well, because it's a period drama set in the late 19th century, and it's about who we heard there. Anne Skelly plays Beth, who is on... It's all set in one day on her 23rd birthday. And I thought, you know, going into this, that it was sort of very much billed as it was going to be this incredibly tense day in her life where she is ultimately deciding what to do, whether to off her stepfather and run off with Jamie Dornan or not, right?
Yeah.
And this was all going to play out. The 24 hours was going to play out across, I guess, 3 hours of television. And it was going to be all this tense, to-ing and fro-ing and coming and going and decision-making. And I thought this was a really boring hour of drama. It is kind of, you know, it's a problematic period drama when you sort of sit there looking at their clothing going, they're very clean, that these are farmers in the 19th century and their shirts are pristine and spotless. And that's not that doesn't make for good riveting drama when you're noticing the cleanliness of their shirt sleeves.
Yeah.
It's quite fitting that the knickers saga is going on this week, because if you are into your bovine activity, there's plenty of it to be had in this, including a rather graphic scene where a cow's, you know, intestinal gases are vented through a stabbed hole in its side, and another cow doesn't fare too well, and that's actually how our two star-crossed steer-crossed lovers fall in love.
You just can't help yourself,
right?
Can you?
They fall in love trying to, you know, pull some desperate cow out of a muddy trough. I have to admit, maybe I approached it, you know, in with the wrong mind frame. There may be people out there who enjoyed it much more than I did, but I found it ponderous and tiresome. And while it had these beautiful vistas of, you know, rural Northern Ireland,
yeah,
after kind of 20 minutes of that, I was like, okay, come on, get on with the plot here, kind of thing. And for me, the plot was there was a lot. So, you know, I was sort of promised, I was sold this idea that it was going to be this super tense day in her life, but actually, there's an awful lot of flashbacks to other parts of her life that are expositional setting up of the storyline. Mm. And I didn't just find them all that entrancing or interesting. And I also think Jamie Dornan makes for quite a sort of unusual leading man, in that all he is good looking, right? He just doesn't have, in
my opinion,
there's
a kind of a blankness to him.
A real blankness to him. And he's supposed to be playing this mysteriously seductive, you know, anti-hero potentially. You're unclear as to his goals really at this point in the show, but he's described by a bishop as an evil man, and he has this like painting of the devil on his wall or something, hell on his wall. So he's supposed to be this, you know, mysterious, just all engrossing dark man, and he isn't, right? Because what he is a model who stumbled in front of the camera and became an actor. And the thing about him is, I'll say this, that if you see him interviewed on chat shows, he's actually really charming and likable.
Yes,
in
he
his
is.
Interviews.
Oh, no, he is, yeah.
But
yeah.
Put him in front of a dramatic camera with repeated takes, and I don't see any of that in him. I find him very just dull and not really able to carry what he's being asked to carry. And that's no fault of his, but it is the fault of the people who keep putting him in front of those cameras. The rest of the cast are uniformly very good. You've got Anne Skelly, who I'm not familiar with, but she sort of carries Beth along very well. Matthew Rhys, who I loved in The Americans, doesn't quite manage to pull off a Northern Irish accent to my taste, but pulls it along well enough. Charlene McKenna, who people will know from various Irish things going back, and Sean McGinley appears as well.
Yeah.
And there are two more episodes to go, but I have to admit, I wasn't sold on the first one.
Yeah, it's an odd choice for television dramatization. That book came out in the 90s, and McCabe is quite a literary writer, and I suppose you could maybe compare him with McGahern, because he's from that part of the world, and the surroundings and the countryside are almost like a character in his books. So it works when it's on a printed page.
But
if it's just you're throwing up shots of cows, it doesn't, you know, you go, I don't get this.
What I found sort of odd were there were times where Beth in particular would be, you know, throwing out these lines of dialogue, and they were these really pretentious kind of odd sounding statements about the evilness of the land, and my heart is broken, blah, blah, blah. But yet she literally was saying them to herself, like standing in the middle of a field. It would have almost worked better if you were just hearing her thoughts rather than this very odd, you know, strange girl standing there mouthing these weirdly poetic affectations in the middle of a field after venting gases out of a cow's stomach. But look, it just, I wasn't sold on it, I have to admit. But again, I might have approached it with the wrong frame of mind.
Was Jenny Dern not very good in The Fall?
So I wasn't as sold. Now, here's the thing about The Fall, right? He played this serial killer. He's obviously a very handsome man. He's a very successful model.
Yeah.
In The Fall, he actually didn't really have to do that much acting. He did a lot of stalking and killing, and most of that is physical posing. And that's what models do, right? Models understand how to physically own the space they're in and sort of really attract your eye. But, I mean, I think anyone will agree with me that as much of The Fall that I've seen, the longer you watch it, the worse it gets throughout the series. And that it relies more on him acting towards the end of it. What I actually liked him in is The Siege of Jadotville, which is film on Netflix. I think he kind of holds his own there, but there's a lot of action and he gets a lot of, you know, run around and shoot guns. And I think he should stick more to frenetic action-y stuff than heavy lifting,
lines of dialogue.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I completely agree with James about Death and Nightingales. Clothes really annoying. Pristine white shirts of tenant farmer. FFS. Oh, Jesus, Jamie Dornan is back on the telly. When The Fall was on, the missus was getting very hot and bothered. Indeed, I can't compete with his big mumbly beard. Somebody else says, pretty and blank. That's exactly my type. What day is this show on again? That's on Mondays at 9:30. Right, a few bits of TV news. Victoria Smurfit, who was in Ireland last week.
On the late,
She was doing various interviews. Has written a TV series.
Yeah, that's actually also going to be set in Northern Ireland. So, I have to admit, I'm familiar with her as an actress. She's popped up in various things over the years, but I'm not familiar with her as a writer, though. I did read she used to write a column in Dubliner magazine, I think. And basically, she has co-written or, well, produced this series. It's a co-production between Northern Ireland and Canada. And it's called The Box. And it's going to be sort of a female friendship group set in Port Stewart. And it is about them sort of find a group of oddballs and odd ducks finding their way around the ring, a boxing ring. So sort of a comedy drama based around that. But it seems to have been in development for over a year. And she's been working on various reality TV programs in the US and seemingly pitched this idea to one of the production companies. And the reason she wanted to make it in Northern Ireland is that they sort of said, oh, we want to make it Northern Ireland a place where it's not just police dramas or fantasy. So to kind of show that real life can happen there as well.
I'm sure Northern Ireland's having a bit of a golden period then for production, it would seem.
And I would say they're very hopeful that whatever Game of Thrones spin-off is coming.
Yes, I wish there would be probably multiple ones. Right, don't they've announced that Netflix are going to produce a new animated series, Roald Dahl, on it? That's a good idea.
It is a really good idea, and you could see, you know, I suppose the only problem is for many people, a lot of kind of the visual impact of Roald Dahl is tied to Quentin Blake's illustrations as well, because they are so sort of emblematic of those stories for my generation anyway, that we just, those kind of scrawled pictures that were in the middle of the books. But yeah, Netflix have announced in a partnership with the Dahl Foundation, which I think is headed up by his widow Felicity, that they're going to turn a number of his stories into an animated show, which is going into production in 2019. And like, it's every big one you could imagine: Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Matilda, the BFG, the Twits. But I think most interesting, also the two autobiographical ones, Boy and Going Solo, are also on the slate as well. So it's going to be basically, I'd say, his whole back catalogue at some point.
Okay, that's a very interesting idea. A couple of more comments about Death in Nightingales. Michael on Twitter says, I think your reviewer is underselling the show. I found it riveting. The costumes, he decries, I found stood out as beautiful. Not sure what your viewer is expecting. Some people just fail to suspend their imagination long enough. Now,
that's me told.
That's you told. Stick with Death in Nightingales. The book is excellent. A slow burner with a powerful climax. It's on the Leaving Cert this year, which may explain why they made it. All right, didn't know that. I don't mind that the show is boring. Jamie Dornan had his top off in the bit I saw. I had my fun. That's all that matters. Right, James is going to be demonstrating more of his lack of imagination after this break.
TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there, Cadet.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Sit, sit, sit. Good girl, good girl. Who's a baby? Who's my kisses? Let me see kisses.
I guess you could say that we're a little obsessed with rescues, and it's a whole subculture. If you're different, if you're a loner, a straggler, you can make a home for yourself here.
There you go. That's Dogs. All episodes of that are streaming on Netflix. Is that it? Like, just dogs?
So, yes and no, right? I mean, I have to admire the chutzpah of... I would say really one Twitter account to have turned the internet around, because the internet used to be like cats, right? Cat videos was what we notoriously watched on the internet.
Yeah.
But now it's dogs, right? So there's this really famous Twitter account called We Rate Dogs that has come to completely redefine the internet's love affair with canines. And now it's all dogs. And if you don't follow We Love Dogs, you should. It's actually really funny. But this is a series of, I think, six, almost hour-long documentaries on Netflix about dogs all over the world. So you have the US, Japan, Italy, Germany by way of Syria. It really is sort of a very global and Netflix baiting its audience way of looking at the sort of interconnected activity between man and man's best friend. And it understands exactly what people are coming for here. This is like tearjerker, you know, from the get-go, because the opening episode is based in Ohio and it's about this cute 11-year-old girl with like a big bow in her hair and pigtails who has really very bad epilepsy and is suffering really bad fits because of it and is therefore getting a service dog named Rory, who is this like adorable labradoodle, you know, mix with fur that looks like it's a teddy bear. I mean, it is like they have picked the cutest dog that they could possibly find, who will now sleep by her side every single night and alert the family whenever she's having a seizure. And it goes to great lengths to really explore the role that service dogs do play in improving the lives of particularly young children with disabilities. And there's a very poignant moment where another girl who is getting a dog through the same organisation, her mother is giving a kind of talking head to the documentary or the documentarians, and it says something along the lines of, she doesn't want people to look at her daughter anymore as the girl, you know, with the limp or something. They want people to look at her daughter and say, oh, there's the girl with the dog, right? And that having these dogs in their lives will really impact and improve everything about them. And then it moves from that to the second episode, which is like even more heartbreaking, which is about this Syrian refugee in Berlin who is Skyping home to his dog Zeus, who has remained this massive, like this again, picture perfect husky, who, like, it could be in Crufts for God's sake, who is in Damascus being kept by a friend of his. And it's about the humanitarian efforts to get Zeus out of Damascus and to Berlin. Now, I did have to suspend my sort of you have to park your own very critical worldview here, because obviously there are plenty of people who need to get out of Damascus, over a really cute husky. But at the end of the day, that's not what this show is about, right? This show is about dogs and people's love of dogs. And I don't want to spoil what happens with Zeus, but like, this is also going to be a show with happy endings, so you can sort of piece together, right? Okay. And it is a heartwarming moment, you know, and it this is TV that is just designed to absolutely tug at your heartstrings and be there for the entire family, because I think Netflix released it just around Thanksgiving in the US, so it was basically something that the whole family, feeling, you know, bloated after their turkey and pumpkin pie, could sit down and watch together and be really moved by. The other episodes I haven't gotten to yet, because at 50 minutes, I think they're just pushing it in terms of length, because it is ultimately a documentary about dogs. And as much as we had boxers growing up, we are a dog loving family, you know, even 50 minutes of that is kind of pushing it.
Yeah.
But the other episodes include, an Italian fisherman and his dog Ice, who accompanies him every day on Lake Como looking for fish. And I think there's Japanese dog groomers. And the one we heard there is one I haven't heard, but that's about rescue dogs as well. Mm-hmm. So it is essentially about various different things as framed through the narrative device of having a dog involved in your life. I mean, the Syrian one is about refugee finding their
The dog
place.
Though seems to be very has had some sort of transformative effects in their life or
very much so. Yes. Yeah. So look, if you are prone to tears, you know, that's what's going, that's what you're going to get here. If you don't like dogs
or crying,
there's probably not that much in it for you. And at 50 minutes, I would say it would very much test your patience. But and if you don't want to buy a dog for your child at Christmas, I wouldn't be showing them it either.
Yeah.
But if all those other boxes, if the other way works for you, then definitely plenty to see here.
Yeah. And a lot of people actually already texting in saying that they really enjoyed the show. Paul says, Sean, that show Dogs is so soothing for the soul. Don't be cynical about it. Okay, I'll just move on. Does James know if there's any news of a third season of Get Shorty, currently the best show on TV? Says Eta in Swords. I'm inclined to agree with you, Eta. It has been very good. You haven't seen...
Eta, that is me told. That'll be my Christmas homework now, catching up on the first two seasons, because I haven't seen it at all, so I can't tell you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, given where the second series ended, I imagine almost certainly there is going to be a third series, Eta, though I don't know that for sure. Someone else says on the subject of those Roald Dahl cartoons that have been announced on Netflix, I disagree that it's a good idea to make Roald Dahl catalogue into cartoons. Kids today need to be encouraged to read. Roald Dahl was the perfect author to do that. If they know that they can just flip a switch to some cartoons, they won't be bothered getting immersed in books. Well, that's probably our TV review slot isn't probably the appropriate place to bring that up, I would have thought. And going back to the Nightingale show on RT1, Countryside is very beautiful, but too much. Also, Beth's voice is very monotone.
Yeah, I would agree with that. With all of the characters, it's a very monotone northernness. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Right, anyway, speaking of dogs and cartoons, crying, Boris Johnson. Inside the Foreign Office starts tonight on 9pm on BBC Two. You may already have seen clips of it. Here's another one.
Before meeting up with the Economy Minister, the Foreign Secretary has to do a quick bit of filming for his official Twitter feed.
Okay, yeah. Hi folks, Boris Johnson, Foreign Secretary. I'm here in Lisbon, in Portugal, to celebrate what is the oldest alliance and friendship in diplomatic history, going back to 1386, going forward through the Napoleonic Wars, through to the Second World War, when, of course, this was a place that was... I'm trying to think what happened in the Second World War. What did we do in the Second World War? It was neutral, wasn't it? The Azores. What did we do in the Azores? Hi, folks. I'm Boris Johnson. I'm the Foreign Secretary. I'm here in Lisbon. Portugal is our fourth biggest trading partner.
We are Portugal's fourth largest. Portugal is not our fourth largest.
There you go, Boris Johnson having a complete handle on his brief there. Now, some clips, people will already have seen clips of this floating around on social media.
So tonight's is the last part of three, but the first two are repeated on, I think, BBC Two this Friday.
Right, okay.
And well worth, at like 3 a.m, so set your recorder for it, but worth doing it. Now, I will say, RTE actually produced a very similar show to this in August last year that was called The Thin Green Line, which explored sort of the Irish diplomatic service abroad in the Department of Foreign Affairs. So it is cut pretty much exactly from the same cloth as that, except it's way more interesting because it's really about Brexit and how Brexit is just throwing, you know, upsetting the apple cart for, you know, Her Majesty's Foreign Secretary and Foreign Service. And obviously Britain was a global power and has an embassy absolutely everywhere. What is really impressive is the man who made this is Michael Walkman, and you do hear him throughout. He is well versed in making documentaries for BBC. He's managed to get all over the world because you see him in like Myanmar and then Mongolia and then like America, and he got a great ride out of this one. But it's just really, really fascinating to watch, to have been given like an insider's view of the Foreign Office and see all these career civil servants who have built their entire, you know, cultural understanding and work professionalism on diplomacy and working together, having to now sort of come to terms with the reality of Brexit and what that means for Britain. And there's some really telling moments where, particularly, for example, they talk about the Rohingya situation and how Britain is trying to court Burmese trading as a post-Brexit deal.
Possibility, yeah.
And so they have to sort of toe the line of being very critical of the government while also not potentially getting in the way of a business transaction. And in Mongolia, which is the capital of which I can't even remember, is the most polluted city in the world because they burn tires for heat. They see this as a great opportunity for a British company which has created pollution masks, going, what's the best solution to pollution? Pollution masks, not rather stop polluting.
And sell them tires as well, probably.
So it is it's really fun. And even though, I mean, Boris Johnson, he hasn't done great work for, as we look out politically for Britain, he makes for incredibly entertaining television watching.
But based on some of the clips that have been circulated, it's just more of Boris Johnson being an idiot.
Yeah.
Being a lazy idiot.
Yes, well, I suppose it shows the difference between what is a politician and what is a civil servant, right? Because civil servants go into that line of diplomacy, rise up the ladder and through competition and skill.
And know their job.
And know their job.
Yeah.
And then you have someone who is elected as a bit of a buffoon, right? I mean, that's part of his USP as a politician, this kind of affable nonsense. And really, there's not much under the surface, you know, once you scratch away at the affability, and that becomes extremely clear as you're watching this.
Oh,
it
dear.
Is like something from the thick of it, you know, it really, really is, particularly when he's flying to Paris to sort of cozy up to the French government, which we ultimately know totally failed to work out, and he's going to speak French, and this, you know, very senior European diplomat in the British Foreign Service is sort of going like, what are you doing? And it's just fantastic.
Yeah. From an Irish remove, it's kind of funny. But if you're an English person, going, that's our foreign minister.
Yeah. I mean, it does paint a picture of them being a very professional foreign service with, you know, with missions in every single part of the world. And that is to be admired. And they obviously run it extremely well, but it is certainly not without its faults.
Yeah. Crikey. Just going back to that TV show on Netflix. What's the name of that dog show on Netflix? Thanks, guys. It's called Dogs. I watched Dogs when I had a dirty hangover over the weekend. Hours and hours of sobbing and a trip to the chipper later and I was cured. So perhaps, you know, serving suggestion there for what to eat and what kind of perhaps mental state to be in. And finally, Peter from Mayo says, would that be a dogumentary?
I guess it was.
It continues. James, thanks a million for coming into us. James Dempsey there. We're going to take a break. After that, the Segregation Academies.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card, making personal loans more personal.